clear of the closing doors, please.
Y'all, I finally did it. I made a podcast. This is The Next Stop Is with me, Jane August. This is my new podcast where I'm going to talk to iconic and creative New Yorkers about their work, passions, and what New York City means to them. And if somehow you're here but don't know me, I'm Jane, and I'm a New York City content creator where I've become known for my series documenting my journey visiting every museum in New York City. I'm also the creator of FranCon, which is an annual Fran Lebowitz dress-up party that ended up in the New York Times last year. But enough about me, because I have a great interview with a fantastic guest, and we're just going to get into it. My first guest is Alejandro Fortunes, but you may know him on TikTok as Diebones, where he has amassed over 1.5 million followers and has become known for his eclectic video style and out-of-pocket stories. If you're in the New York City fashion scene, you may know him from his clothing brand, Good Fortunes Project, which started with him dyeing t-shirts in his kitchen in North Carolina and has evolved to clothing and footwear inspired by New York City and the wonders of everyday life when you refuse to grow up. He is also number 29,944 on famous birthdays, where one of the fun facts is that he attended a Yankee game with friends in 2022, and I was one of those friends. I am delighted to be joined by my dear friend, Alejandro Fortunes.
And the crowd goes wild. Ah! You guys are so kind. Please stop. You're flattering me.
You know how they say that recorded audience, like laughter and cheers, they're usually like dead people because it was recorded back in the 50s. So like all those stock audios we hear are like ghosts.
That's scary. Not a fun way to start my podcast.
No. But like we even have the support from like ghosts and stuff. So I think it's pretty cool.
Thanks for being the first guest on my podcast.
I'm honored. This is so cool.
I figured if this recording goes really badly, I feel comfortable embarrassing myself in front of you.
Or if it goes really well and you get like Brad Pitt for the next episode, he'll be like, let me look at this Diebones guy and see what he did. And, you know, we'll become best friends with Brad Pitt, which would be pretty cool.
That's an interesting celebrity of all the choices you could have given.
The first like really famous person that came to mind was Brad Pitt. I don't really know much about Brad Pitt. Isn't he into like Scientology or something?
No, that's Tom Cruise.
Oh, that's okay. Well, Brad Pitt is also famous, so.
So I'll let you tell the people about how we met.
So there I was, fresh in New York City. I had just moved from North Carolina. I had sold all my belongings and dropped like a surprise clothing collection to get enough money to move. And I'm scrolling on my TikTok feed looking for things to do. And I see this curly-haired person going to every museum in New York. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so cool. So I followed them. And then I get a DM like, hey, I like your content. Which my content like is very embarrassing. Like, I'd be screaming in the camera. So I'm like, oh, God, they followed me back. And they're like, I like your content. Do you want to go to a museum with me? And I'm like, oh, my God, I'd love to. So then we went to this yeehaw-ass museum. It was really nice. It was really cool. But it was like I had just left North Carolina, and it was like I was back in North Carolina. And I had, like, cow print on. Like, I was really ready for this moment. And then we had bomb food across the street. And it was really cool because up until that point, I had only explored, like, around my block. So it was the first time, like, taking the train somewhere really far I had never been. And it was cool.
Yeah, we went up to the Dyckman Farmhouse Museum.
Yeah, shout out Dyckman Farmhouse.
In Inwood.
Shout out the cows and the farmhouse. They didn't have cows, but we were dressed like cows. So it was awesome.
And now we're friends.
Yeah, we're buddies.
I live by playground rules. I feel like you just ask someone, hey, do you want to be friends? And usually they will.
It's so nice because I find making friends as an adult it's super easy, but it's like very intimidating. Like it's like, it feels weird to ask another person, like, do you want to hang out? Do you want to come to my house and like play or something? Like it just sounds weird, you know?
But that's what it is.
Basically. That's literally what it is. And it's like, I admire you for a lot of reasons, but I admire you for like putting yourself out there a lot. Like you're one of my friends that I love that there's always, it's never just like, you want to hang out? Sure. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? It's always like, tonight we're going to this thing at this thing and you can come if you want, but if you can't, it's okay because I will still be going. I'm like, that's sick. Yeah, I'm down. I've done such cool things around New York City because of you and your friends, so it's been really cool.
So let's just dive right in. So what is Good Fortunes Project and how did it come to be?
Oh my God, I could talk about this for hours. So Good Fortunes Project, it's a clothing brand that I kind of treat it, but I treat it like an art project. Like it's clothing. We've dropped a coloring book. We drop comics every few months. And it's basically how I tell stories and express myself through a different medium. I was a junior in high school, and I was working at a shoe store we're not going to say the name of. It rhymes with Bernie's. And they were paying me like $7 an hour. So even though I worked and worked and worked, I was not making a lot of money. And there's this music festival I really wanted to go to. It was called Counterpoint Music Festival. It had all of my favorite artists. I had Outkast headlining their first tour in like years. Chance the Rapper when he was like really good, like he just dropped Acid Rap. J. Cole, all these artists that I was like super obsessed with. And the tickets were like $250. And for like a broke 17-year-old Alejandro, that was a lot of money. So I worked shifts and worked shifts and I still couldn't make enough. So I remember I posted on my Instagram. It was a picture with me and like a shirt that I threw bleach on. I accidentally spilled bleach on a t-shirt. My mom was like, Alejandro, throw that away. It looks so ratty. Why are you wearing that? I'm like, this looks kind of cool, mom. So I posted a picture of that t-shirt and I was like, $10, I'll dye whatever you want on a shirt. And this was before kind of bleach, dyeing t-shirts with bleach or like that type of tie-dye was really popular. Like it was way before like Kanye or any like these fashion people would wear it. So it just seemed like I was ruining the shirt. Nobody really got it. But slowly but surely, people started hitting me up. They were like, oh, can you put butterflies on it? So I would like cut out cardboard cutouts of butterflies, stamp it with bleach. Some guy was like, I want my rapper name on it. So I would like cut out letters with his rapper name, stamp it. Now he had a shirt that said it. And this was all because I couldn't afford to print anything, you know, but I still wanted to make something. It was just like a get rich quick scheme. You know, I was like literally not thinking about, oh, I'm going to start a brand at all. I was just like, I need to make money to get this music festival. Finally, I sold enough shirts. The drama club at my school, they ended up, instead of like getting team shirts printed or whatever, they got shirts from me. And that's like, what, 20 kids already? And $10 a t-shirt? We made the money. And I made it way more than I needed to. So I get to the festival. We're camping out there. It's a three-day festival. And I remember the festival grounds was like, it was like in a valley. So there's a bunch of tents and people camping. And then you walk up this big hill. And then in another valley is like the actual stages and like the Ferris wheel they had and like all these like music festival type thing. And I remember like walking up that hill and looking out. And yeah, the performances were really cool. But what stood out to me were these like white tents. And I went down and it was the vendors. And I had never been in an environment where I met an entrepreneur. Like, to me, an entrepreneur was dudes in suits, you know, like dudes in suits doing finance. I'm like, that's lame, whatever. But this was like, I went down to the vendor kind of section of the music festival and I was like, oh, I make rings out of precious metals and I travel the world doing that. I'm like, that's, you can do that? Like, that's allowed? Some other guy was like, oh, I tie-dye t-shirts. I'm like, me too, like I do that. Like some other guy like, oh, I make like jewelry out of bones. I'm like, that's kind of weird, but like that's really cool, you know, like that's sick. And it was the first instance where like, yeah, the festival and the performances were great, but what stood out to me were like these people that they're essentially doing what they love and getting paid for it. And it was adults, you know, it was like, it was people that I was like, damn, I'm about to graduate high school in like a year. And the plan was go to college, but like maybe there's a different path. It was the first time that thought occurred to me. I've always been a creative kid. So after the festival, I get home, and I had gone to the festival without my mom's permission. I literally just told her, like, hey, I'm leaving. She's like, Alejandro, what are you talking about? And then I just left, which is a horrible thing. I'm so sorry, Mom. And I came back. She's like, you are grounded forever. I'm like, Mom, I'm so hungry. Like, I just spent all my money at this festival. Like, can you please cook for me? She's like, I'm not cooking for anything. So I get home after the festival. I'm locked in my room, and my mom's not cooking for me, so because she's mad at me. She's not starving me or anything, but, you know, she's like, whatever.
This
so,
is a Rapunzel of you.
Dead ass. So I'm literally in my room, and I'm like, I guess I'll order Chinese food. I have, like, the last money I made with my shirts. I have, like, $10. I'll get Chinese food. They deliver it, and I get two fortune cookies. And I open them, and I'm like, wow, these are some good fortunes. Wait a minute. And then the name Good Fortune stemmed from, like, the two little fortune cookies I got. It had something to do with the, like, fortune favors the bold or some corny fortune cookie thing. But I'm like, that'd be a cool name for, like, this thing I'm trying to do. So I made the Instagram account that night. And, yeah, it started with me just dyeing t-shirts. Eventually, I had enough money to print on stuff. So we would, like, print on t-shirts. I would print on, like, upcycled garments. I eventually, like, got really good at dyeing to the point where, like, I cook things on my stove now. Instead of, like, I don't use bleach anymore, which, like, a lot of people are like, that messes up the clothes. I know. It would, like, it eats away at the clothes. So now I, like, cook things on my stove. And long story short, it started off with, like, me spilling bleach on a t-shirt and trying to get to a music festival to, like, it's my full-time job now. Like, I pay rent and buy cat litter with it, which is pretty cool. And, you know, I'm not balling. Like, I'm not, like, no private jets or anything yet. But, like, the fact that I can live in New York City and pay rent off this thing that I started when I was 17 is, like, a dream come true. And that's kind of how I started the brand.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's such a fun and inspiring story.
Yeah. I haven't told it in full on TikTok yet. I've been waiting for, like, the right time to do it.
We got an exclusive.
So, you know, it's an exclusive. I'll tell it on, like, live, like, on TikTok live. But it's the most precious stories to me are the ones where, like, only I know, you know?
Well, now all my listeners on my podcast.
And on the podcast, exclusive stories right here.
All five of them. I don't know. How many listeners do you think this is going to get?
5,000 million.
That's a good number.
5,000 million, indeed.
5,000 million.
I don't know. I'm going to get everyone on that's seen my famous birthdays page to support.
Someone's on there writing those fun facts.
It was so weird. And my name, like, some of the information is just, like, incorrect, too. I think someone fact-checked it or something, but before it was, like, Alejandro is 6'7", or, like, some crazy shit. I'm like, damn, I wish. Like,
so you dye shirts, and you've expanded to non-dyed items. One of my favorites is the jacket with an x-ray of your teeth on it.
Yeah.
So did you always plan to expand? Like, what inspires these other designs that you come up with?
It's really funny when people think I'm just, like, the dyed guy, and I guess that's, like, part of the branding, but people always send me, like, crazy, intricate tie-dye videos of, like, this dude with, like, a long beard that listens to Grateful Dead, and he spends 30 hours dyeing one shirt, and I'm like, that's really cool, but I've never been trying to do that. Dyeing shirts was just something that could get my foot into, like, this world of fashion, and it was always a plan to explain. Like, the plan was always, like, world domination. Like, it was always, like, I was never just trying to sell dyed goods, but I think, like, when I first started the brand, I couldn't sew, I didn't know how to screen print, I didn't know anything, I didn't have any, like, traditional skills, but I knew I could dye a shirt, I could dye the fuck out of a shirt, the hell out of a shirt. So I just got really good at this one thing, and what became, like, my crutch, like, my, you can't sew, you can't do anything these traditional designers can, became kind of, like, my superpower. So I've always had ideas to do non-dyed items. And, you know, dyeing stuff's cool, but at the heart of Good Fortunes, I think it's, like, the storytelling. So, like, you mentioned the teeth jacket. That was a really cool moment because both my parents are dentists, and they came to this country from Colombia, like, as dentists because it pays way better here. My dad's, like, an oral surgeon and stuff. My mom was a dentist in Colombia. So they had the idea that, like, I was going to be a doctor or a lawyer or, like, any traditional immigrant parent job category, right? So I went to college and everything, but I realized more it was for them, which was a silly idea. Never go to college for other people. Do it for yourself. It's a really expensive thing. When they see me, like, dyeing shirts and they see me, like, running this clothing brand full time, at first they were skeptical. They're like, what are you doing? We didn't move to the U.S. for you to do this. But now that they see, like, I can pay rent, now that they see I can, like, help with bills, now that my mom sees I can, like, you know, send money or take them on trips or whatever, they're like, oh, I guess it's working out. And so the tooth jacket was, like, that whole collection was teeth inspired, which, like, in hindsight, I didn't know so many people were scared of teeth and the dentist. So, like, a lot of people were like, I want to buy this, but I'm terrified of the dentist. So I'm like, damn.
Well, I know people are scared of the dentist. I don't know people are scared of teeth.
Like, teeth. Like, it's like a thing. They're like, oh, they're scared. I don't know. So, but the jacket did well, but, you know, some people that wanted to support didn't because of that fact. But yeah, the whole collection was telling the story of, like, taking an alternate path that isn't, like, maybe I didn't become a dentist, but I can still pay tribute to how my parents got me in this position to where I can live in this country. So it's all about storytelling.
So what other stories have you been telling through the clothes?
Through the clothes? I took a very literal approach on storytelling lately by literally coming up with characters. I found when I first did the brand and we first started, like, printing designs on the shirt, it feels like everyone has a clothing brand now. It's like the new, everyone wants to be a rapper. Everyone wants to be a designer, right? It's super, super saturated. And I've been doing it long enough to where, like, I kind of did it before it was, like, really popular. And now I'm doing it, like, after it's kind of, like, exhausted. Like, everyone wants to be a designer.
Now you have to be a rapper.
Yeah. Hey, you never know. Nah, I wish. I would totally be a rapper if I could. But I have no bars. Zero bars. I have Dr. Seuss bars. But, yeah, so I was doing it for a while, and when I first started, I was just kind of printing cool designs on T-shirts, which at the basis, that's what I do still. But I don't ever just want to slap a graphic on a shirt because I know it'll sell. That wasn't very fulfilling. And if it doesn't sell, it's, like, even bigger, like, oh, no, I don't even like this shirt. I just thought it would sell. So instead, I've started this kind of system of, like, I'm creating original characters for my brand. There's Bleach Boy, which he's inspired by the fact that I started my brand Bleaching Clothes. So Bleach Boy is, like, a dye spirit. He's, like, this physical embodiment of bleach. The lore behind Bleach Boy that we explore through the comics that my clothing brand drops is that, like, when I lived with my mom and I was dyeing shirts, all the bleach would, like, get on her clothes. Like, she'd get little dots here and there. And she'd be like, Alejandro, you're ruining my clothes. And I'd be like, damn, I wish I had something someone to blame, right? So it came the idea of Bleach Boy, like a mischievous die spirit. Like, it's not me, Mom, it's Bleach Boy. She's like, ¿Qué pinche Bleach Boy? What is that? So, but yeah, that came the idea of Bleach Boy. We have characters like Zoom. When I first started getting a lot of orders, I was struggling keeping up, like, shipping them out. You know, I wasn't streamlined yet. So people would, like, email me angry, like, where the hell is my order? So I came up with a character named Zoom. She's a frog that delivers our mail. So that way it's like, how mad can you be? It's the frog's fault. And you can't be mad at this adorable frog named Zoom. And she's a little frog with balloons on her back. She carries a box. And just using different aspects of things that run into real life and making that characters, those are the type of stories I tell. And they have a whole, like, backstory, too. If you read our comics right now, they're, like, on a journey to a different world, and they're meeting new friends along the way. So the dream is definitely get like the comics animated one day and stuff like that. But for now, I like the literal approach of like storytelling by coming up with characters.
Or just coming up with ways to blame.
What? Yeah, yeah. A lot of it's like, it's not me, it's Bleach Boy. And they're like, oh, Bleach Boy, it's fine.
So in addition to your own lines, you do a lot of collabs. You've worked with some big names like Kid Super, and you've had celebrities like Tyra Banks wear your clothes. Like, how does that feel? How does that come about?
So, I think maybe not like the really poppin' designers, but I speak for any kid that like started making shirts in their bedroom. Seeing someone you admire wear something you've made is like the best feeling. It's like, oh my God, maybe I'm supposed to be doing this. So the very first instance of that was maybe 2 years into the brand. I was in college. So at like midnight, I would go into the guy's bathroom where the showers were and dye clothes in the shower, like while everyone was asleep. And I would have to do this at night. And then I would let the clothes sit. And then I would wake up at like 5 a.m., take them, rinse them off, dry them outside. So it was very like DIY, you know, and then I had to go to class. So 2 years into the brand that I started, I'm doing this, right? And then I go back home for winter break. I see that Mac Miller is doing a free meet and greet at this like mall that's like 3 hours away from my mom's house. At this point, it's like 1 a.m. Like, I was about to go to bed, and I see this, like, Instagram ad. And I'm like, damn, I have to be the first one in line. I have to give Mac Miller my merchandise. Like, he's my favorite artist of all time. My first concert that I've ever been to. Like, I love Mac Miller. So I snuck out. I'm so sorry, Mom. I took my mom's minivan. I snuck out. I drove 3 hours with, like, a bag of merch. I got there when the mall opened. Like, they weren't letting anybody inside, but everyone that was, like, the janitors and, like, cleaning staff of the mall, they were going in, so I just followed them, and they happened to speak Spanish. So they were like, ¿Tú qué estás haciendo acá? Like, what are you doing here? I was like, oh, I'm here to help. And they were like, okay. So they let me in. So I was the very first one. It was a meet and greet at Zoomies, and I was the very first one in line, and I met Mac Miller. I gave him a bag of merch, and he ended up wearing it on stage a couple times, which was like, that moment I was like, I'm supposed to be doing this. And that was just luck, you know? That was just the Mac showing love. The Kid Super thing is, Kid Super, if you don't know, is a Brooklyn designer, for anyone watching. He's like my favorite designer of all time. He's one of the main reasons I moved to New York. I'm like, if I need to be where the type of things that Kid Super is doing are happening, you know? So that's why I moved to New York. We have like a repertoire. And then one day he hit me up. He's like, I have these pants that need to be dyed. They're like these sample pants, but the factory can't dye them. They're for a fashion show in 4 days. I'm like, oh, yeah, for sure. And he gives me the pants, and I dye them, and it's really cool. If you see the pants, it's like some Dickies pants, and they have like these outlines of these like characters on the front of the pants. And if you look, no one knows this, but the outlines are actually One Direction. He just took the outlines of One Direction and made it a solid color. So it's like, yeah. So I call them the boy band pants. It was super cool. That was the reference for it. You can't even tell anymore. That just looks like abstract shapes on the pants that kind of look like people. That's the typical Kid Super style, but it's actually One Direction. I dye the pants in my shower, cook them on my stove, literally like trying to make this happen because Kid Super is my favorite designer of all time. Like, I can't let him down. I go to the laundromat, wash the pants, and I have to turn them in that night. So I dry the pants, and I take the pants out. I'm like, oh, they look a little smaller. That's probably fine. And then I go to Manhattan to drop them off. I arrive at this like giant, lavish apartment. I don't even know. I think they were just like renting it out to like work out of, you know? Kid Super is going to Paris the next day with the pants. So I arrive and I'm like, hey, like, here are the pants. And he's looking at them like, they shrunk. And I'm like, oh, like, yeah, just a little bit. And he goes, these aren't going to fit Jose. And I'm like, what? And he's like walking around like this apartment, like, these aren't going to fit Jose. And I'm like, who's Jose? He's like, J Balvin. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't know this. I knew the stakes were high. It's Paris Fashion Week, but I thought a model was wearing them, you know? So I was like, my heart sank. I'm like, I fucked up. And then he goes, it's okay. He throws them to Lucy, which is the seamstress. And he's like, Lucy, can you make these bigger? And Lucy's like, okay. And she cuts the pants open, makes them bigger right there. I'm like, oh, okay. And I help out a little bit, and then I leave. And then I don't hear anything for a couple weeks. I see, because before the show was released, like on online or whatever, the pictures from Vogue were out. And then my friend texts me, he's like, aren't these the pants you were dyeing in your bathtub on your story? And I look, and it's like this lady smiling, wearing the pants. I'm like, yeah, they were. And then I look, I'm like, is that Tyra Banks? Fucking Tyra Banks is wearing these pants that I dyed in my bathtub. It's crazy. And it was a really cool moment because Tyra Banks, like when Mac Miller wore my shirt, it's like, I told my mom and she knows I like Mac Miller, but it wasn't like, she's like, okay, some guy, right? She knows who Tyra Banks is, you know? So it was a very like, look, mom. And she's like, oh, Tyra Banks, Alejandro, Alejandro, no puedo creerlo. Like, it was crazy. So Tyra Banks wore them. The whole fashion show was really cool because it was like a comedy show. So they got a bunch of comedians to wear the pants and the clothes. So Andrew Santina also, I think I'm saying that right. He also wore them. He's in Dave, and he does a lot of stand-up stuff. Like, he's been around for a while. He also wore the pants. And, yeah, I got to be a part
of it.
Same pants? Different pants.
Oh, okay.
And it was two pairs of – well, it was four pairs of pants, but they only used two.
Like the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
On God, yeah.
Yeah. Tyra Banks wears them. Jay Balvin wears them. They can all just pass around these One Direction pants.
Literally, yeah. Jay Balvin didn't wear them because he likes them super baggy, and they did shrink. And it was in Vogue, which is, like – yeah, it wasn't good fortunes in Vogue, but it was something that I made in my bathtub to be in Vogue is, like, crazy to me.
In addition to making the clothes, you've been doing in-person pop-ups, but you do more than just a shop. You kind of make it an experience. How did it evolve into that?
So I grew up doing pop-ups. Like, literally, the first month I started the brand, my high school had this thing called Spring Fest, where basically a bunch of clubs would have a little tent, and you would go, and they'd have free food. So I asked the principal, who hated me. Like, I had just gotten suspended. I'm like, can I please do Spring Fest for my brand? And he's like, no, no, no. So I got a bunch of kids in my school to sign a petition to let me do it. I literally walked around with a giant poster board, like, please sign this. They didn't know what they were signing, but whatever. And I presented it to him. He's like, okay, you can do it, but you can't sell anything. Like, you can just be there. I hit up my best friend, my brother, Rafi, who has this, like, tent that's used for family reunions. So it was the size, about the size of, like, four or five of the regular tents. And we had the biggest tent at Spring Fest. I put I had like a lot of couches, extra couches in my garage from moving and stuff that my mom did. So we put a bunch of couches in there. We had a mannequin. My friend parked his car. So while there was like there, the Spring Fest was playing music. We would play like cooler music. Like I was giving out pizza and stuff. And like I couldn't sell anything, but I was like you said, cultivating this experience. So I grew up doing pop-ups. I think the best thing. Anyone can sell a shirt, but what people remember is like an experience and stuff. And I want the whole ethos of the brand. One of our logos is a treehouse, and that's what I call my community online. I want it to feel like you're a kid coming together. Like maybe it's a treehouse, maybe it's someone's garage, maybe it's like the cul-de-sac. But I want it to be like people coming together to doing what they love or like having a good time. So it started with the pop-ups. And lately, I didn't do pop-ups for like a year, for the first year I moved to New York, because I was really just trying to get my footing. I was like kind of scared, you know? I was like, this is New York. Like, this is not the high school Spring Fest I started with. Like, what are people going to think? But I found a really cool space. His name is Murph at KMG Studio. He's been so awesome letting me use the space for not like you. And another thing too, New York's expensive, so like I was shopping around pop-ups like, can I do a pop-up here? And the guy was like, yeah, just $3,000. And I'm like, that's a lot of t-shirts. So I found this spot owned by Murph in Brooklyn. It's called KMG Studio. It has a stage. There's really cool tiling everywhere. It's like it feels like a house party, which is exactly the vibe I wanted. So I've been throwing these events. We've done like two or three so far, which like the first one was just people come and shop, but I was like, I don't want it to just be like you come buy a shirt and leave. So I'm like, okay, we're going to call it Switch and Sip. So you can bring some beer, some alcohol, some juice, whatever you're into, and bring your Nintendo Switch, and literally we can just hang out and play Mario Kart or whatever it is, Super Smash Bros. And that was the first one. The second one, I wanted to do more of a show. We used to throw a lot of shows in North Carolina, like through Good Fortunes. I got my friends from North Carolina that I performed at my first ever pop-up to come out to New York.
So cute.
Cool little full circle moment. I got, their name are The Social Contract. They're really good. They're from Fayetteville and Charlotte, respectively. And then Nyla Noon, who's from K-Town here in New York. She's from Korea, but she's hanging out in K-Town. She performed as well. She stole the show, so good. And that was more of an event. That was like people performing. It was sponsored by Jaeger, so we had like drinks flowing. It was the premiere of our brand new comic. Like I mentioned before, I do comics, so it was like exploring new characters and stuff like that. And that felt like the next step up. So the next one, I think it was you and Jesse who suggested it. And I was like kind of thinking it too. The space has a kitchen. So you and Jesse were like, what if you had a like how to cook class or like how to dye a t-shirt,
how
right?
How
to make shirts, right? So I want to brand it. I was like, let's make it a cooking theme. So I'll dress up like a chef and it's like how to cook with dye bones, right? And I'll have my friend who's an actual chef. He's Colombian as well. He works at like Michelin star restaurants. Like he's from North Carolina as well. So I want him to come out and like be actually cooking. So while we're cooking shirts, he's cooking like empanadas and shit. Like, and it'll just be like a cooking theme. And so that's what I have planned. If not this month, next month. And I do want to do a spooky theme too for the next month too. So we'll see.
What's your biggest goal for the brand? Like what's next?
Yeah. Ever since I was a kid, I guess in high school or whatever, one of my biggest goals has been to have my own store. Like you said earlier and mentioned that pop-ups for me are like not just you go and you buy a shirt. It's like a space to hang out. And I would love to have that be permanent. I grew up in North Carolina where there wasn't shit to do. All we could do is go to like a shopping center outside of McDonald's and loiter. And that was literally like the hangout spot. There was nothing around. And of course, New York's different, but the idea is the same. I want to have a spot where you can just come and hang. And yeah, there's t-shirts on the wall, but maybe there's a stage too. Maybe one night we're doing poetry readings. Maybe one night there's performances. Maybe one night we're doing a movie night. Like I would love to have a space that's just that communal space, that treehouse effect that I was talking about earlier. When I was a kid, when I was like 15 or 16, I like kind of pimped out my mom's garage. Like I had like a bunch of like couches and tables and like a flat screen TV and we had a full size fridge and that was like the hangout spot with my friends. So I would love to recreate that, but for like grown ass kids, like people like our age now that just want somewhere to hang, you know? So that'd be really cool.
So just a mall and a store basically.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be, I want it to be somewhere you can literally just go. Like when you go to like a mall or when you go to like a store, it feels like you have to buy something sometimes. I want the vibe to be like beanbags. You can hang out on the couch if you want. You go there because you know there's always something happening, you know? So yes, a store, but maybe like a space. The goal is always to have a space because if the brand can live in like any brand can live on the internet, but if the brand can live in real life, then like that's huge to me.
Now we're going to take a quick break for my one ad. I'm very excited that The Next Stop is recorded and in partnership with Brick. Brick is a nonprofit arts and media institution in downtown Brooklyn that offers artist workspaces, a public media center, arts and performance spaces, and media education courses. In addition to their summer concert series, Brick Celebrate Brooklyn Festival in Prospect Park, they provide programming for Brooklyn Free Speech Public Access Radio and Brick TV, Brooklyn's public access television station. They work to make resources easily accessible and available to artists and media makers in Brooklyn, such as this podcast. Anyone in Brooklyn can take low-cost courses and become a certified producer to create their own TV shows and podcasts for free. For more information about these opportunities and to learn more about Brick, visit brickartsmedia.org. That's B-R-I-C, artsmedia.org. You can also find them on Instagram at Brick Brooklyn. And we're back. So speaking of space, you have a lot of space on the internet.
That was good. That was really
lots of people listening might know you from TikTok.
Most people, yeah.
And I know you started the account to promote your brand, but ended up just telling stories. Why did you turn to storytelling with this online persona you've kind of created?
So I've always told stories. That's why I can like talk and talk and talk. I've always found storytelling to be kind of like my superpower. Like if I want to captivate somebody or something, I'm pretty good at telling stories. And I made a TikTok account because it was when TikTok was first starting to pop off and I had a clothing brand and I wanted to, you know, Instagram sucks for small business. So I was like, I need to promote on TikTok. Everyone's telling me. So I made a TikTok about my clothing brand and it got 100 views. So I made another one. I'm like, hey, whatever. And it got 300 views. So after making like four, I'm like, ah, fuck this, whatever. So I had the account, but I just would never post on it because I'm like, people don't care. And then one day I went to Walmart and I had like the worst customer service experience ever. And I was just so frustrated. So it was like during quarantine too. So I went back in my car and I didn't know what to do. I was just like, So I turned on the camera and just started venting. And I guess I made it humorous because I've always been a kind of a clown. Like I used to like I used to have Snapchat in college and stuff, and what I would do is I would add I had like hundreds of people on my Snapchat, and I would do skits on my Snapchat, which doesn't lend itself to going viral, but like I was pretty known for like my Snapchat stories. Like it was like I would do just these intricate stories with Snapchat features. So I've always kind of been on, and in middle school I would like do YouTube videos. They were very cringy. Don't look them up. And so I've always kind
of
been.
I'll link them in the bio.
Oh my God, you wish. They're all private. There's one that's like out there that someone re-uploaded, but whatever. So I've always kind of been performing for the camera. I've always been like a child of the internet. So this was no different. I had this weird customer service experience. I recorded it on TikTok and I posted it. I literally expected nothing. And it got 300,000 views. And I'm like, oh, that's what you want. If you couldn't tell before, I did a lot of like dumb shit in my childhood. Like I would like sneak out a lot. I have a lot of party stories. I have a lot of like just hooligan stories. I'm like, okay, let me tell one of those. 500,000 views. I'm like, oh, okay. Told another one, almost 1 million views. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I told that one for my brand and it got like, I don't know, like 30,000, which that was the most eyes I've ever had on me at any time, you know, like 30,000 views. That's 30,000 people who saw my thing. And I don't judge likes. I don't ever look at likes. I don't care if you like
that. Well, it's one person who watched it 30,000 times.
Which is also just as awesome. So that kind of became my strategy. I know people don't want – everyone has a brand. Everyone has something they're pushing. Everyone, you know? And no matter what angle you go from, people don't want to be advertised to. And I feel like that's what I was doing before. So now I tell stories about my life, and then every so often I'll like throw in a brand story, and it's like a mixture of both now.
And so you built this community, the Treehouse, and a lot of your followers ended up being young people and
kids.
How do you handle being an internet personality that kids look up to?
It was super weird at first. Like my first account, it wasn't that many kids. Like it was I think what people don't know too is like most of the people on TikTok are like, oh, there's a lot of kids on there. Like everyone uses TikTok, and most of the people that like go to the trouble of commenting and stuff, it's usually like high schoolers, middle schoolers, right? They're the ones that go crazy for stuff. So at first it was really weird. I was just like, what is this? I felt like some weird substitute teacher. I would get comments that I'm like, what the, like, why would you comment that? I would go to the profile. I'm like, this is a child. This is an eighth grader. Ugh. And I'm 26 years old. So it was super weird at first. And I didn't resent it because I was always, always grateful that anybody of any age would like care what I do. But I was like, should I be doing this? Like, should I be changing my style? But then I kind of kept going and it evolved. And now it's not so many kids, but still a lot of kids. And it makes sense. Like, I would tell stories when I first started about my experiences in middle school, in high school, about how I used to get bullied for being Latino in middle school. How I used to do dumb things in high school, in college, right? And, of course, that audience would attract that age group, right? But I find that like telling stories about when you're younger, one, you can embellish more, because like if I told a story about what happened yesterday, I'm not making it up, you know, it literally happened yesterday. But if I tell a story about something that happened like 10 years ago, I don't really remember exactly how it happened. So I can exaggerate it more, you can like stretch it more, you can make it more exciting, which is why I like went with those stories. And two, like, I don't know, it's a really cool thing to be someone that someone looks up to, you know? I remember being that kid on YouTube. I had so many idols on YouTube that, like, I want to be like them when I grow up. And now I get those same type of comments. So it went from me being like, ugh, why are children watching me? To like, okay, I'm a do right by you. I'm a still be an adult. Like, I stress that enough. Like, I do not make content for children. It's cool if you're, like, a kid and you like my stuff, whatever. But I'm going to be myself regardless. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like being the type of person that like I wish I had when I was younger, like some maybe like an alternative Latino guy. So it's a really cool feeling. Like I don't resent it. I never resented it, but I don't like look down on it as much anymore. I'm empowered by it. You know, it makes me happy.
Yeah, there's gonna be kids who become artists, and when they're asked who they're inspired by, they're gonna say you.
That's incredible, and like that's so priceless. Like that it. I don't think what I do is that important. You know, I make silly T-shirts and I tell silly stories. But the amount of like I get messages on Instagram like, I was suicidal, or I was like going through like a really deep depression, and like your videos are the only thing that kind of kept me going. And I don't talk about anything particularly deep in the videos, but just the fact that like I can give you a break from like what your feelings, like your feelings of depression, even for like a minute, even for like 2 minutes, that's like, that means the world, you know? So I don't care if you're like, you're a kid, you're an adult, who you are. If I can make that sort of impact, like that's priceless. That puts a battery in my back. Like I should be doing this, you know?
Even the first time we hung out, we were on the train and there were some kids and a mom came up to us and was like, my daughter loves you. And it was so sweet.
Yeah, man. Like, you meet people that, like, you meet kids or, like, young people that go up to me and they're like, are you Diebones? And just, like, the look on their face, like, it's insane. If I can make someone that happy, I'll do it forever. Like, it makes me so, so happy that I can make any sort of impact on anybody, you know? And it's pretty cool that, like, I don't know, I feel like young kids are the future, you know? Like, young kids kind of rule the world. Me as a 26-year-old man, I still feel young. I still feel like I'm a kid. Yeah, I'm paying taxes and, like, paying rent and shit. But, like, that spirit is still there, you know? So it really ties in with that.
So we're going to get back to New York City.
Okay.
You've been here for almost 2 years.
Oh, my God, yeah.
What inspired you to move? Like, what? Why New York City of all the places?
When I first moved to this country, I lived in, I think it was, like, Staten Island. I was, like, 2, right? Or, like, maybe, like, 1 year old. Like, I was super, super young. And I didn't speak any English. But I have, like, my oldest memories of going to the Museum of Natural History and reading, like, dinosaur facts and, like, being obsessed with the dinosaurs. And so it was always, like, those were my earliest memories. And then we moved to North Carolina, whatever. And I always felt like I have to be somewhere where things happen. Like I love North Carolina, whatever. But, like, people go there to settle down. People go there to, like, live calmly. I have to be somewhere where, like, things are happening, right? I lived in North Carolina my whole life, apart from, like, when I was really young. So New York has always been kind of like a maybe like rose-tinted glasses kind of place, as most people do. But I know what it was, you know? Like, people move here and they're like, what do you mean it's not a playground for influencers? Like, God, come on. Like, I know it's a kind of stinky. I know there's, like, the subway is ass sometimes. Like, I know what it is, you know? So it wasn't that type of rose-tinted glasses, but it was like people go here to make things happen, you know? Everyone I admire has lived in New York or is from New York. You hear story. It's like a mythical at this point. And I want to make my own myth. I want to make my own story. And I want New York to be part of that and to enhance my story. And it's only done that, you know, like the Kid Super thing would have not happened if I was not living in New York. I would have not been able to do pop-ups like this. I'm trying to do New York Fashion Week next year. Like, these are things that can't happen if you don't live here, you know? And trust me, I'm like, the rent is insane. And, like, I don't even live somewhere, like, super, like, gentrified. And it's, like, the rent is crazy. Like, sometimes my block is a little hot. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, there's trash everywhere on the street. But I love it, man. I love it so much. It's the spirit of New York. It's, like, you come here to make it. And it's so cliche, but it's, like, it's true, you know? Like, everyone here has a dream. Like, and it's beautiful, you know?
And no one says that about L.A.
I don't know, man. I feel like L.A. is, like, where you – don't get me wrong. Like, I visited, and, like, the weather's beautiful. But, like, L.A. is where you go once you've already made it, you know? Like, it, for me, at least, it feels that way. Dude, I'd never want to drive ever again. Like, ugh, for sure.
Yeah, I could say you don't need to drive in New York if you have at least 2 friends in the car.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Or if you know how to hop the turnstile, allegedly.
Well, if you want to go somewhere outside of New York City or, like, deeper in Queens.
Yeah,
beach and you don't want to take all your stuff on the bus.
Dead ass, yeah.
You just need to have at least 2 friends with a car.
And then you're good.
I think everyone kind of has their own New York, and part of that is determined by the places you frequent. So I came up with some NYC favorite kind of questions that I can ask all my guests to wrap up the show. So first, what's your favorite restaurant in the city?
It's like a restaurant cafe. It's Sunday to Sunday in LES. It's owned by this guy named Gerp. He's really cool. He has an amazing menu. It has drinks if you're feeling like nighttime. It's like coffee in the morning. It has amazing brunch. I met him through Kid Super, so it's kind of like a special place in my heart. Like, it's cool to see people that I've worked with Kid Super go out and do their own thing. So it's one of those. It's called Sunday to Sunday. It's delicious. Anytime someone visits me, I recommend it or I take them. That's probably my favorite spot to go to. Or like K Barbecue, I really like, but my partner knows more about those spots than I do, so probably Sunday to Sunday.
What's your favorite museum in the city?
Oh my God.
I know, hot question for me.
Yeah, for real. The Museum of the Moving Image in Queens was so cool. It's all about, like, it's like a movie museum, but it's more about, like, literally the moving image, like anything, like TV, music videos, movies, like anything that moves. They had, like, a stop motion exhibit that was really cool. I take people there all the time too. I think it's super sick. They have a whole Sesame Street exhibit that's amazing. Yeah, it's probably one of my favorite museums.
That one, when they're like video games, I was like, whoa, you're right. That is a moving image.
So cool. Yeah, I really like that one.
What's your favorite performing arts or music venue?
Oh my God. I don't know. I haven't gone to as many. Anytime I go to a show, it's either like with you or like it's like a free show in the park type thing. So I don't know. I haven't found a venue that I'm like, this feels like home. I love being here every time. Maybe, I don't know, whenever there was like a free show at like Prospect Park, like I went to like the Jazz Festival recently. That was pretty cool. I don't know if that counts as a venue, but anything where I can lay in grass, like.
Yeah, it counts. Was it at the band show?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, Brick does that.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow. Shout out Brick and the beautiful people there.
Do you have a favorite park in the city?
I love this question when people ask it on like TikTok and they're like, I don't know, Maria Hernandez, which like, shout out Maria Hernandez. It's cute, but like, what? For like laying down in grass purposes, like picnic type vibe, I'd guess like Prospect Park. For like, I'm bored and I want something to happen today and I want to run into somebody, maybe like Washington Square Park. A lot of people hate Washington Square Park.
That's not a park anymore.
No way. What is it? Like a...
It's NYU Kids Stomping Ground. It's TikTok content central.
Yeah. It's a...
Is it a park anymore?
I don't even know. It's where something's always happening, you know? So if I'm wearing a cool outfit and I'm like, I want a tiny microphone in my face, I'll go there. Or like even, I used to like work in Soho, so I would like take my lunch breaks there and there's always something happening. So it's cool. I do like it still. A lot of people think it's annoying or like, it is pretty annoying, but I like going there. Not always, but it's cool to just people watch there. But yeah, so probably those two.
I haven't gone there in probably a year and a half.
That's fine.
I'm scared to go to Washington Square Park nowadays.
It's better during the summer.
I don't know how much my outfit costs. Like.
Someone asked me that and I was like, and they literally just walked away. I'm like, oh man, I messed it up.
I'm like, I got these pants from Goodwill in Arizona and I stole this shirt from a friend.
Yeah. And those are the people popping on TikTok. So maybe I should start doing that.
And my tote bag is always someone gave it to me for free.
Yeah, dead ass.
And the long debated question, what's the best pizza spot in the city or what's your favorite?
There's this place, Tony's Pizza by my house is always bomb. It's in Bushwick. I'm sure there's other locations. It sounds like every other pizza spot, but it's called Tony's Pizza. It's on Knickerbocker. It's really good. And then I went to this place where I have no idea what it's called, but I was right outside a fashion show. It was right by, what's the big venue where the Eagles played a couple nights ago?
Madison Square Garden?
Maybe.
But the Eagles, the sport team, or Eagles,
the band? The band. They played there a couple. And then, like, and there's a bus terminal right next to there. I think Harry Styles played there.
Yeah, that's Madison Square Garden.
Okay, Madison Square Garden. So I was walking out a fashion show, and that was my stop, like, at Madison Square Garden. And I was, like, really hungry, so I went to this pizza shop. Unassuming. And literally, the sign just says pizza. It was so good. It was so delicious. Maybe I was just really hungry, but I had the grandma pizza. It was so good. And I really want to go back, but I have no idea what it's called. But it had a little award in the window, so I guess it's like a spot.
Okay, well, we've narrowed it down that it's around the garden. It has a thing in the window, and they have a grandma slice.
I'm sure if we went, we could find it.
Maybe a listener can find it.
Yeah, please help. Yeah, maybe it's like super basic, but yeah, I don't know.
It's probably like Joe's Pizza.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not Joe's Pizza because I know about Joe's Pizza. But yeah, it was really, really good.
And then that's really all my questions I have.
Yay!
Any final thoughts, questions, anything you want to share, anything you want to promote?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Anytime I have a chance or a space to talk about things that I love, it's like a blessing. So I really appreciate you guys. Anything I want to promote? I don't know. I'm Diebones on all platforms, DYEBONES. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Instagram. If you want to support, the website's goodfortunesproject.com. We have things that are all price ranges for all budgets. Yeah, follow me. Leave a comment. The secret word for this live will be every museum in New York. So if you're watching this podcast, if you're watching, comment every museum in New York. And that's how I know you made it to the end of the podcast.
That's a really long word. It's just one word altogether?
Yes, at no spaces.
No spaces.
Use discount code EveryMuseumInNewYork for 5% off your next order off GoodFortunesProject.com.
New York or New York City?
Just New York. Yeah.
Okay.
We're upstate counts too, I guess.
We're discount code.
Heck yeah.
And that's it. Thank you, listener, for tuning into the first episode of The Next Stop Is. You can follow me, Jane August, on TikTok and Instagram at Jane August. The Next Stop is produced by Felicia Big. It's recorded at Brick House in downtown Brooklyn. It premieres on Brooklyn Free Speech Radio and can be found wherever you listen to podcasts. See you next time.